Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
How vocal will the Vols leaders get to be as they get to 38? And discuss things at the SEC spring meeting. We'll get Austin's take on what will be discussed amongst NIL, future scheduling, and much more. It's an impactful meeting that's coming up for the Southeastern Conference. We'll get Austin's take. Plus, in hour number three, Bobby Carpenter of Carp's Corner, Sirius XM, college football. Last week, we discussed his interview with Nick Saban. Today, we will get his take on all things college football, but also his first review, his initial takeaway from Top Gun Maverick, because he will be 15 minutes removed from the end of that film where he was taking his kid to, surprising, I believe, his kid, with going and watching Top Gun Maverick this afternoon. Looking forward to that chat.
I predict this will be the most energized we've ever heard Bobby Carpenter coming off watching this film today.
Which is saying something.
James Worthy was saying something that is very intriguing, pointing to the coaching aspect of the NBA and connecting that to the coaching that players of his era and the era right after his that they received in college for 3 or 4 years that a lot of the current players aren't getting. They're either one and done, they're 2 years in, and they're bolting for the NBA. In some cases, there are players who, of course, didn't even go to college. They went straight to either the D League or went straight from high school prior to the rule that are remaining in the league, like LeBron. But James Worthy's not referring to the LeBrons of the league. He's talking to the depth of the league and pointing out that the style of play that everyone's complaining about right now, or the lack of cohesion from team to team, he believes has a lot to do with the lack of coaching that they're getting at that age between 18 and 24 when a lot of players develop into the pros that we see today. The average age of the NBA All-Star is between 26 and 27 years old. But to get there, you've got to develop whenever you're first entering the league, and a lot of times we're not seeing that come to fruition.
I think too many are going to miss the point of what Worthy is saying, and he's making some very good points, because of what he says at the end of it, and they're going to focus on that. He says, Kareem had 4 years with John Wooden. Michael Jordan and I had 3 years with Dean Smith. Isaiah Thomas had some years with Bobby Knight. You learn the fundamentals. Not only that, you learned how to live. You learn how to balance your freaking checkbook in college. There's a lot of things. When you don't get that, guys are coming to the NBA who are not fundamentally sound. All they do, this is what people are going to focus on, all they do is practice threes, lift weights, get tattoos, tweet, and go on social media. That's about it. So people are going to take that and say, oh, James Worthy's an old man who's out of touch. Talking about tattoos is some negative or whatever. But what he's saying holds a lot of water. I mean, we're talking about the creme de la creme, the legends of the NBA throughout history,
yes,
that all spent time under legendary head coaches in college that helped mold them. He brings up something. He said Bill Russell told me when I got in the league that with the Celtics, almost every play they ran, they had five options of shooters in that play. He said, you're not going to get that much now with isolation and how offense is run in the NBA. I think what he said is completely true. It's not universal throughout with every player that doesn't go to college for, you know, 2 or 3 years or four, whatever. But he's right for the most part outside of the superstars of the league.
You can be an old man hearkening back to the good old days, and you can be right.
Yes.
And that's what he is here. You know, and not every guy of his era had, you know, spectacular coaching or was coached by a Hall of Fame guy. I don't know who Dr. J's coach was at UMass, right? But, he certainly spent time in college.
But I think his point, too, is how long was Dr. J at UMass?
Yeah, right.
You know, so wherever he was, he learned a little bit about life and played longer in college. So he was a little bit closer to a finished product by the time he got to the NBA.
And more of an adult once he got there who experienced some life. I think it's a completely valid point once you hear him say it, you think, wow, that's pretty obvious. But when's the last time we kind of discussed it in this inside of this frame? I don't think it's been very recent. So I applaud it. And I don't think we hear from James Worthy very often. So I was happy to hear from him. I think it's a good point, and I think it's part of the reason the NBA has lost some of its luster. I mean, I've said for a long time, it's way too much of an isolation game.
Yes, it is.
And that's the number one reason I don't find it enjoyable to watch.
Dr. J, by the way, played 2 years at UMass, and then he was gone to the ABA at that point, the Virginia Squires.
I mean, and he's referring to the Lakers here, too, who still don't have a head coach, which is just mind-boggling to me. He's talking about the players that have been in and out of the organization while they've been trying to retool instead of rebuild. And where they go from here with Westbrook and LeBron, with reports that Phil Jackson would rather rebuild with Westbrook on the roster and reports that he would recommend they trade LeBron if they're going to trade one of the other. They would trade LeBron for the return on investment. But Worthy says, hey, we've had some good players. We've had Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle and Lonzo Ball. We've tried to win quickly. But, you know, in Kobe's last few years, we brought in Steve Nash, who was a little bit older, and Dwight Howard came back and came back from his back injury, and we traded away draft picks to try to win immediately. And I think they're going to have to really think about how they need to build. And then he goes back through. It's tough to build like the way the Lakers need to build in the NBA because of the development of the player that you're looking for.
Well, and he cites three different teams to watch and how it's done the way he'd like to see the Lakers do it. Memphis, he said, you watch Boston right now.
Yes.
And how they were built. And Milwaukee, you know, are the three blueprints for what he'd like to see from the Lakers. It's interesting, and he's not wrong. I will say I understand Jeannie Buss and the Lakers thinking of, we're the Lakers, we can attract the top free agent every year, or at least be in the mix for them, so we don't have to do a full reset and rebuild. We can shuffle the lineup and try to get something new in year after year. That's not working. They need to reevaluate and probably go with what James Worthy is saying, even if that means a couple years where you're not as competitive, but build it from the ground up that way around young star players, and then you add the veteran pieces in after that. He's not wrong. I also can understand the Lakers thinking of, now we'll just go get the top free agent or make the big trade so we're relevant because we're the Lakers. And we're going to be relevant every year no matter what.
And he's right. I mean, he's right in thinking, look at the Brooklyn Nets as an example. The Nets barely made the playoffs because he's like, Worthy says, every team goes through these injuries. It's unacceptable just to point to that for the Lakers. Look at the Nets. You know, the big three is an illusion. Because while you're still going through the injuries, you have to have the depth and you have to have the player improvement and development behind those guys in order to keep pace to where you need to be come playoff time. So the fact that you're not able to do that is embarrassing as a former member of the organization, pointing to the Lakers, that they couldn't battle through based on the roster building that had been going on.
And how about the apparent final three for the job? Golden State assistant Kenny Atkinson, Milwaukee assistant Darvin Ham, and former Trailblazers coach Terry Stotts.
Go with one of the assistants. Here's my thinking on that. I am so tired of the retread guys.
So you're out on Stotts.
Go if you have gotten to this level, right? Juwan Howard has turned you down, and all these other people that they've talked to about the job has turned down the Lakers.
Yeah.
Go with one of these assistants that's in an organization right now that has been good, that's been innovative. And we're talking about what? A Warriors assistant.
And a Bucks.
And a Bucks assistant. And Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham played in the league also. I say go that direction. Well, give a new guy a shot.
I'm with you for most jobs in the league. But, I mean, I think, and I have been saying, the Lakers have to be able to attract somebody better.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. But I'm saying if it's to this point, I'd prefer they give a new guy a shot at a head coaching job.
Sure.
But the thing about the... you know, when McVay ends up, he's the head coach of the, you know, the LA Rams. Whenever he got the gig, you know, that was the, you're looking at Washington going, look at the connections here. And his name was mentioned well before he got the job.
And everybody was high on
it. Yeah, but everyone was surprised. You know, man, like they've gone really young, you know. But there was a buzz to it. I mean, with the NBA, it is so difficult to learn about any of these coaching staffs because there's just a retread over retread. And then the young guys, I mean, it's few and far between whenever you see a coach that jumps to the ranks that has the young coach that jumps up and has the opportunity to lead. Because most of the time, you're looking at a guy who's been on a staff for a decade or has been an assistant coach for a decade in the league, has been elevated from the D-League and is doing something that's in an interim and then keeps his job, or he's a fired head coach that's getting the job again, to what Chad's saying.
So
it's just a lot of retreads.
Quinn Snyder had no interest coming from Utah. Juwan Howard had no interest coming from Michigan. Once upon a time, I mean, we're talking about it with Dokic, you know, you would drop everything to go coach.
Yeah, I mean, and once upon a time, we would be hearing Calipari and Jay Wright and all these.
Coach K. Who was a finalist for the job a couple different times.
Right. I mean, we're not hearing that here. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good sign. But that's also a sign that these coaches with their teams, their PR teams, I'm saying, their PR and management teams on where they're going next, don't see this as a quick fix. Right, you've got LeBron at 37. You've got Westbrook, and according to reports, the Lakers ownership team, they're saying that in the interviews, they're asking these guys, how are you going to integrate Russell Westbrook into what we're doing long term? So it's not like my plan's not to have Westbrook here. You better have a plan to keep Westbrook around, according to the reports. All that's very intriguing to me because it's not the Lake show. It's not how this has been treated this offseason.
No, I would love for them to be able to, just for my interest, to be able to drop a bunch of money into Jay Wright's lap and lure him out of retirement to give the NBA a chance and then be the Lakers coach. That would be a lot of fun to watch. Terry Stotts is 64 years old. He coached for George Karl for a number of years, got his chance after the Mavs won the title in 2011 with the Hawks and then eventually the Blazers. I mean, we're talking about a guy who got his head coaching start later in life as a 64-year-old retread versus some younger coaching options not had a
48.
Chance yet.
Darvin Ham
is 48, huh?
Wow. Yeah. And
I remember when he broke the backboard in the game for Texas Tech. Can still see it right now.
Zion Williamson.
Atkinson's 54.
So 50, there you go. There's our guy.
There's right in the middle. Guy. Let's meet in the middle. 54. You got a 48, 54, 64. That's going to be the selection process now. Let's go with that 54-year-old. Pin the tail on the donkey at this point, right now. Kenny Atkinson's your guy.
Zion Williamson is set to sign an extension. He's eligible for a five-year extension this offseason. It's a five-year, $186 million rookie contract. That's the max. And the reports are he's going to be doing that with New Orleans this summer. When asked about the extension on April 29th, he said, "Of course, I wouldn't be able to sign it fast enough."
Of course, after all this great play,
of course, yeah,
why
with the
I
right foot
that?
Issues and his weight, he spent all the time on the sideline and in the training room.
Pelicans
of course,
have to
he
be
would
nervous
sign that.
As hell about that.
But at the same time, what option do you have?
There's also kind of a celebratory feel about him getting cleared. I mean, he got cleared here in May. When did training camp start up? I mean, his foot could break
October.
Between now and then.
October. But he's been cleared to play without restriction, and the talk was that the Pelicans had an outside shot of making the playoffs, and that if they did that through the play-in, he was going to return now. So he's that far along. Is there reason for optimism with that? I mean, there should be from New Orleans because they're finally going to see him.
I'm scared to death of the guy.
Think about where we were whenever he was selected and how quickly they sold out of season tickets that night.
And you know, they are now.
And now that investment that's been made from the fan base at that, you know, at the arena, and you know, they completely rebranded their team.
And it's not just them. It would have gone that way, whoever won. I mean, I remember I was talking about the Knicks. And the Knicks fans were fired up. They wanted to win him. It was going to be the next Patrick Ewing lottery. And that was going to be the rebranding of the Knicks, and the Knicks were finally going to get a stud.
Yeah, there was no Zion Ja debate. I mean, it's fun to look back now and say, man, what would have happened if Ja Morant would have gone first? But no one was debating that. It was Zion Williams. It was the clear number one pick, whoever won that lottery. And it's weird for me to say, but I look at Zion right now, if he does not change his diet, his exercise routine, and get slimmer, these foot ankle issues are
going
only
going to
persist. He's 21 years old.
Yeah,
it's weird for me to say. I feel like a 21-year-old is done, unless we see a completely new and improved Zion Williamson.
He needs
when he
his
comes
Moses
back.
Malone, right? That the way Moses Malone talked to Charles Barkley, he needs somebody like that. I don't know who it's going to be, or if it's going to be somebody on his team or somebody from the outside. But he needs a big influence to get on him about what it means to his future.
We know
you're
how
not just
talented
fat
he is.
Now, but your fatness is going to.
It's going to continue.
Bang on that foot and maybe, those feet and those ankles for a long time.
Maybe I'm not. And it wasn't going to happen, but if they pulled the upset over the Suns and made a deeper playoff run, maybe we see him, and maybe that actually jumpstarts what he needs going into the offseason, because you get into some type of rhythm, right? You don't have to ramp back up after all the workouts to get cleared, to play the 5-on-5, to get medically cleared. So I think he's put in the time and effort. And if they just win a series and he's able to come back a little bit earlier, a month or two earlier, and just get some wear and tear going at 21 years old, that could help him for next season. But I think he's slow out of the gate next year. And no, I wouldn't be optimistic at all with this. The next injury is happening because of what Chad pointed out.
I think anytime we start to think, man, maybe someone's just different. You know, we know athletically Zion Williamson is different with his size and his explosive ability and his leaping ability and everything else. But eventually, you know, Mother Nature is going to come to haunt you. And if you're that big and you're jumping that high and you're landing that hard and you're moving that fast, your feet will not stay on you. Your ankles are going to give out. Then your shins are going to be a problem. Then your knees are going to be a problem. Then your hips are going to be a problem. We've had this discussion with Derrick Henry. Well, maybe he's just different. Right, maybe all those carries aren't going to take a toll on him like other guys. And he's very different in many ways, but you have a Jones fracture this year. It always is going to come back to get you if it's that level of wear and tear. He's going to have to learn that he's going to have to shed about 45 pounds if he's going to be able to play a while in the NBA.
85 games, that's how many games he's played since he entered the league 3 years ago. So he's played an equivalent of one NBA season in 3 years for the New Orleans Pelicans.
It's crazy.
Coming up, Austin Price will join us. We talk SEC football, including the Tennessee Volunteers and where we're headed with these SEC spring meetings. Austin Price next on Outkick 360.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Austin, hope you're doing well, sir.
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. Before we kick things off with some topics, Chad, give Austin the options on today's poll question for Outkick 360 on where he would vote among the four options going into Memorial Day weekend. Because I think Austin, he would vote multiple ways if given the chance.
I think he's
to
taking
do this,
a fifth option.
He can only choose one.
The options, Austin: drinking, lake, pool. That's option number one. You get the gist of where we're going with that. Number two, NBA and NHL playoffs. Number three, Indy 500 and Coca-Cola 600. Number four, Top Gun Maverick and Stranger Things Season 4. What are you most excited about, looking forward to? And I guess we could add, like, cookout to the drinking lake pool part of this for this weekend.
I will add... I'll add Obi-Wan Kenobi on to the...
Yeah, that's... The Top Gun, people on Twitter added that on. That's a good one.
So I'll go the last one. I'll go Top Gun. I've not seen any spoilers on the General's Quarters, but I've seen enough to know that people are really bragging on this movie pretty hard. And so I really want to see that. And then I did get to watch the first two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi this morning. So
was it good?
It was really good, yes.
Nice. I will be watching that at some point over the next couple weeks as well.
I thought he might campaign for a fifth slot for golfing.
Not potentially. Yet. No, it depends on where we're playing, you know. I'm waiting on Hutton to call me with a key invite when I'm in Nashville for CMA Fest here in a couple weeks.
All right, I got you. I got to get that invite. Got you covered. Austin Priceless on Twitter is how you can follow Austin there. Right after the weekend, Tennessee's contingent will join the rest of the SEC for the SEC meetings. NIL is going to be on full display, among other topics. It's a very newsworthy week we're about to enter, Austin, where the SEC, as always, will be the leaders of the pack. Nationally, we will be looking at the news that comes out through Commissioner Sankey and through individual leadership at all of the representative schools as to where we're headed with all this and the direction that the leadership wants to go with name, image, likeness, with transfer portal, with scheduling, future scheduling. I'm sure that'll be a topic. Set the scene for us.
Well, I mean, NIL is where everything's going to start. And, you know, trying to get, you know, some semblance of kind of control of everything. Again, I don't think that we have an NIL problem. I don't think we have a transfer portal problem. What I think you have is a combination of the both. Like, I mean, if you think about it, like they all came about, they both came about in a matter of months. And so all of a sudden kids could just go wherever they wanted to if they've never transferred before and they could play right away. It became instant free agency. Then you insert NIL and there's enough back channeling going on across college football. This isn't just an SEC thing. It's a college football issue that, you know, you've got players at other schools calling their buddies who they've known for years going, "Hey man, you've had a really good first 2 years here, but we really need a wide receiver and you could be the guy to help us get over the top." Our NIL people would probably be reaching out to you, you know, and all of a sudden you see, you know, I mean, think about it, you know, the kid at Pittsburgh, he was going to USC the whole time. Same thing with Caleb Williams. You know, when Caleb Williams wasn't even in the portal yet, I had people on the West Coast telling me he's going to USC. And it was the same playbook. He went in the portal, took a bunch of faux visits as Jordan Addison did, and then ended up what? Picking USC. That way they could go, "Well, I looked around. It was just the best place for me." That how do you get control of that? To me, that's the far greater issue, because I can promise you, the players like Aaron Donald or, you know, or even a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, and apparently we're picking on Pittsburgh here because you just start rolling down the Panthers, the great Panthers over the years. But like they end out if they're playing in today's game, I probably say no, because, you know, you have so many schools, you know, trying to cherry pick, and, you know, Nick and Jimbo can sit there and, you know, jab each other back and forth. I think they both look like hypocrites because, you know, if they're no one's believing that, you know, all the kids that went to Alabama just because. I'm not saying they got paid. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that gets thrown out there about numbers is outlandish, you know, but at the same time, I mean, like, they're not going there for free. You know, that's just not happening. And so, like, the whole lunacy that they are is just silly to me. So I think ultimately you're going to talk about NIL, you're going to talk about transfer portals. Can they control the transferring? You know, can they make it where you've got to go and be at a school through two seasons of your sport, so two basketball seasons or two football seasons, and then you're eligible to transfer without penalty and be eligible to play right away? You know, I think that's a possibility. I ultimately just think that you've got to have some tweaks here, because right now it is the wild, wild west. And I don't know how anybody but Congress can get it under control, fellas. And I'm not sure they want to get involved in that. They've kind of drove their line in the sand on a lot of this stuff. They're not going to tell an 18-year-old that he's capped at making $12,000 a month if he can make $40,000 a month.
Yeah, it's certainly a player's market right now as opposed to maybe a fan's market of what would be best for the sport as a whole. Question for you. You mentioned Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, Austin. Do you think that they're really not going to speak to each other ever again, and that they're not ever going to come to some – I'm not going to say they're going to be buddies, but do you think what Jimbo Fisher said when he said, "No, we're done, we're not speaking," is really going to be the case? Or do you think they get together in Destin at some point because they have so many mutual friends and coaching down there, and they sit down and hash things out to some extent?
I think that'll be up to Jimbo. I mean, I think Nick's already, you know, extended the olive branch by making a phone call. you know, and if Jimbo doesn't want to talk to him or doesn't want to take his call, then that's on him. You know, ultimately, that's all you can do. That's all anybody can do if you've made a mistake is admit, hey, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. Then it's on the other side to either accept it or not accept it. And, you know, they said alphabetical at SEC spring meetings, and I'm fairly certain that they're not straight across the table from one another, but I think it's kind of like one more chair over, and they're basically right across the table from one another. So I want to go with, you know, this is on Jimbo. Jimbo's going to have to decide to, you know, accept it or not accept it. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, these guys are going to do what they've continued to do for all these years. And, you know, it just got to be a little bit more exciting with the verbal jabs and sparring back and forth last week. But, you know, it's not like these two guys have been bosom buddies over the years. So, you know, now it's just a little bit more fun for all of us to laugh at all the nonsense. And we did it the right way. We did. Yeah, we did. Sure you did.
On the football scheduling front, it's hard for me to imagine you wouldn't have more locked-in rivalries than fewer. Do you really think there's a scenario where they wouldn't lock in as many as possible?
And I don't know, because, I mean, some of them are so tried and true, you hate to lose them, but, like, at the same time, you know, does that create an imbalance? You know, I think, you know.
Well, do we care about Arkansas, South Carolina as an example?
No.
Right? Or Missouri and Texas A&M as a rival. Those are the constant opponents right now outside the division. Are we all hell-bent on keeping those games going for some of these schools? I understand,
but you got
Tennessee,
do it in
Florida,
exchange
Tennessee,
for
Georgia,
ones.
Tennessee, Alabama, from Tennessee's perspective, are three really big games every year, right?
Is that fair to Tennessee
no,
to do that?
No, it's not fair, but I'm saying those at least are games that people pay attention to and sure. watch every year, right? I'm agreeing with you, Austin, because I don't think that's the case for every school in the conference where you have these three no-brainer, oh, we must have these games. What are Vanderbilt – what's Vanderbilt's program going to say? We cannot lose these three opponents every year. I mean, who are they caring about?
But I'd argue you have to preserve the good ones in exchange for the bad ones.
Well, I don't disagree with Paul, but at the same time, I mean, what you end up running into is a core group of teams that play – I mean, look, you got – Florida and Georgia, the cocktail party. You got Auburn and Georgia, which is the longest running rivalry in the SEC. Then you got Georgia, Tennessee. Out of those three, Georgia, Tennessee would be the least of those three. So, like, you probably call that one, right? You end up with Florida, LSU. You end up with Tennessee, Alabama. You all have Auburn, Alabama. I mean, like, you end up with inevitably like this core group of five or six schools that have the biggest games. Well, what's that do to Texas A&M, Texas, Oklahoma? Like, you know, do you just say, hey, you're going to go back to those old, Big 12 conference days and those are who you're going to play? I just think that you run into problems where it's hard to make a balanced schedule if you try to preserve every game or nearly every game. I just think that's where it gets hard because Tennessee, you don't think Tennessee wants to play the Beer Barrel game with Kentucky? Tennessee wants to play Vanderbilt, obviously, you know, because, I mean, that's their in-state rival. So, you know, it's interesting to kind of see how all this, you know, shakes out. But, you know, I think that's where the conference has got to come up with some scenario that preserves the best games they can. But I don't think you can preserve them all.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Austin Price, VolQuest.com is our guest. So, Austin, I went on a radio station in Provo, Utah yesterday, and they were all over me wanting answers on why Tennessee is ducking BYU and paying the money to not go to Provo and play BYU. And they said, look, our fans love their trip to Knoxville. It's one of the best places they've ever been for a football game, and they were looking forward to hosting Tennessee fans in Provo, Utah for the game. We asked Brent Hubbs about this, and he talked about the mutually beneficial nature of it for both Tennessee and BYU. Are you buying that? It's hard for me to say Tennessee's ducking anyone when they got out of that game and didn't play UT Martin. They're playing Virginia instead and not at home. So what do you make of all this?
Well, financially, it makes more sense for Tennessee. You know, you're not out any money. You were going to have to pay $2 million to BYU. Now you're not having to do that, and you're going to get, you know.
Well, they were going to make money from BYU, right? Was BYU not going to pay them something to go there?
No.
Okay.
Tennessee was going to have to pay $2 million to get out of that game. And now they no longer have to, because the National Sports Council stepped in. And
no, I'm saying, what would have happened if they played the game? Wasn't BYU going to play them?
They were going to play them, yes. But BYU didn't necessarily – they would have played Tennessee. They didn't necessarily really want to play Tennessee because they also play Arkansas the week before, plus their Big 12 conference schedule, because they go into the Big 12 now. So it was one of those deals where it was mutually beneficial for all parties. BYU doesn't have nearly the tough schedule that they had. They get $2 million. Tennessee doesn't have to pay $2 million. Instead, they get a neutral site game inside their own state where they're the home team with SEC officials. So, I think Brent puts it in a good way. I understand why BYU fans feel the way they feel. I mean, I wanted to go to Provo, Utah. I was looking forward to going on that trip. I miss the days of home and homes when Tennessee went to Notre Dame, when Tennessee went to Oklahoma, when Tennessee went to Cal, Oregon, UCLA. I miss those days. I hate neutral site games. I mean, I hate them. Danny White is on the record with Brent Hubbs last week saying he doesn't really want to play neutral site games. Sometimes, though, financially, they're the ones that make you the most money. And so sometimes you do that. But I would like to see Tennessee get back to playing home and homes, but only if they're going to do an 8-game conference schedule. If they're going 9 and you're playing the murderer's row schedule of this league, now you add Texas and Oklahoma to the mix. I just don't think Tennessee or any school in this league can afford to go and play another Power 5 school, on the road in their stadium, and it just doesn't make much sense because I just think that you take too much of a risk there because of all the, all the weight of losses and scheduling and how quick, schools are to move on from coaches. Coaches aren't going to want that. I don't think any coach is going to want to say, hey, you have to sign me up to go to Ohio State or, go to Oregon or wherever when I've got to play 9 conference games in this league.
Austin, if you're making a futures bet right now, is that Nico's first game? Is Nico starting for the Tennessee Volunteers as they take the field at Nissan Stadium against Virginia? Excuse me.
I would lean yes.
Starting the career.
I don't think it's a locked in deal.
Yeah, right.
Again,
right.
I know fans.
It's a gamble. I'm asking to gamble. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where I would lean. Now, I know fans are going to, go, oh, my God, no. But, Joe Milton has another year, so it depends on where they feel like he's at. Has he progressed? I mean, take away the overthrows. He didn't play that terrible. I mean, I get it. I get it. Wow. I get it.
What a compliment.
I get it.
There are a lot of overthrows, though.
So take away half his throws.
Take away all those missed touchdowns that he threw.
Austin, guys. Take away the overthrows and the dudes in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
Take away the 3 water hazards I hit into and the 4 out of bounds shots, and I broke 90.
Austin,
right?
I get it. You take away the overthrows, and the guy is Hendon Hooker.
He's in the NFL.
How many times have you seen a player seeing the light click? You continue to develop. Everybody develops at their own different pace. Look at Tennessee. Theo Jackson a year ago, I would have laughed at you if you told me he was going to have the season that he had last year and be drafted in the NFL. And yet he continued to get better. He continued to work. Willie Martinez got the most out of Theo Jackson. Here he is, a member of the Tennessee Titans. I would have laughed at you had you told me Cedric Tillman was going to have over 1,000 yards at this one point a year ago. So who knows what happens? Look at Jalen Hyatt. Everybody's hoping he can kind of see the potential that, he shows the flashes of. He could be that 1,000-yard guy this coming year. Who knows? But based off of last year, you'd feel kind of silly saying that, right? So it feels silly saying that about Joe Milton, but a year later, who knows? Again, I lean Nico, that being his first start, but you just never know how all this stuff's going to play out.
How big is this weekend for Tennessee football recruiting, Austin?
It's big. It's really big. I mean, you look at all the players they've got coming in, and obviously, having Nico back here is kind of that, representative of the 23 class is big. You got all the commits coming in. You've got 3 official visitors, Vic Burley, Lucas Simmons, Bryson Sanders from Chattanooga Baylor. And then you got a host of really, really good players that are in town. Tamarion Parker, Sean Davion Bradley. You go right down the list, some really high-end guys, Christian Conyers, which is just, 45 minutes north of you guys there in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He's in. you know, as a corner. So, you know, this is a big weekend for Tennessee. And I think the biggest thing is the players that are here for multi-day visits that are unofficials that will in turn around in 3 or 4 weeks from now, depending on when they officially visit in June, we'll see Tennessee again a second time in the course of a month. I think that's where you really make some really big movement, led by, in that case, Francis Mauing-Oa is what I'm told is how it's pronounced.
Good
Francis
job.
Mauing-Oa. And he will get here later today, and he'll be here through the weekend. And so, again, like, he'll be back officially in the month of June. So it's a big weekend.
Nice couple of days for Tennessee basketball. Today, Santi Vescovi announces he's got his name out of the NBA draft altogether. Coming back yesterday, Austin, Cade Phillips becomes the first commitment for the 2023 class. What can you tell us about the forward from Alabama?
Stretch four, can play with his back to the basket down in the post, but can also step out and knock down a 20-footer. Right-hander, has some really nice hops to him. And, again, is a guy that's really, I think, pretty basketball savvy, polished as far as his game speaks for itself. And so, can they add the Edwards kid, Justin Edwards? Like, that to me is a big, how you take that class and all of a sudden you really stack it, with Cade and then Justin Edwards potentially. How you continue to build off of what they've gotten done the last little bit here out of this 22 class, with Julian Phillips.
Austin Price of VolQuest.com has been our guest. Austin, thank you as always. Hit them straight, and we will catch up with you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks Austin.
Busy week coming up.
Hit them
sure.
straight.
That's right. Austin Price or Brent Hubbs or both with us weekly. VolQuest.com, they get it done on Tennessee Athletics. They will have a ton of coverage from the SEC meetings down in Destin, all coming your way next week. With a lot of people making and voting on plenty of decisions there. What do we want to see out of the SEC spring meetings and the discussion led by Greg Sankey? That's next on Outkick 360.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
To me, everything can be summarized with the word leadership. And that has been what the SEC has been great at across the college landscape over the last decade, 2 decades plus. But what I truly want to see is something that I don't think will ultimately happen, but I would be on board with. And it's Commissioner Greg Sankey taking to the podium and laying out the results of the meeting and saying, here is our plan and direction. And he runs through it and he says, by the way, our doesn't just include the Southeastern Conference. This is what we believe is best for the future of college football and the future of college athletics. This is our focus and mentality as a collective body and group for the 14 in this room and the 2 that will join down the line and whoever else would like to join us in attacking NIL in terms of how they're going to not police it, but rein it in, put guardrails up for every opportunity to have some sense of focus and narrowed approach to what it's about and what it, more importantly, what it's not about and where we're going with scheduling and everything else. I just want leadership. We're going to see it, but I want to see it times 10 next week.
Well, I think they've got good leadership. We know that, but I think it's hard to lead on the one issue that's my biggest thing, which is the scheduling, which we just talked about a little bit, because I don't think there's a win-win situation on the scheduling. I think if you go with the thing where you maintain the rivalry games for the teams that have an automatic 3 rivalry things, then you get where Chad said, where you're forcing kind of annual matchups for teams that don't have rivalries and you're trying maybe to build them, but it doesn't really live up. Or you go the other direction And then you're seeing games that you want not played frequently enough, like we've seen in some other conferences. I can't remember the examples, but where you say, hey, when do you think the last time Team X has played at Team Y? And it's been a dozen years or 9 years or some crazy things like that. I don't think there's an easy situation, and there's not like a compromise in the middle. So I don't think even the best minds in college football can just come up with a plan that fixes it. I think you have to pick a poison, a less bad scenario instead of a great scenario, which is going to be one of the disappointing things about what we're winding up with 16-team conferences. That's just going to be a lesser thing for college football in terms of the schedule.
First thing I want to see is a slap fight between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Probably won't happen, but I'd love to see that. Second thing I want to see is a Kirby. I'd say Kirby. So I'm trying to think. Kiffin would be better. Kiffin would be better. I was thinking of the who's the Saban assistant. That'd be good. Kiffin's a good one. Second, I want to see a scheduling plan moving forward for when they add Texas and Oklahoma. Let's go ahead and knock that out. They need to control what they can control. They're not going to be able to come out and say this is the rule for all of college football, but they need to find an emphasis on this, the NIL stuff. And I'm with Austin Price. I think the emphasis needs to be more on how do we stop existing college athletes from popping their head out into the portal, going to the highest bidder, and leaving programs that recruited them and brought them in originally to go somewhere else. I think that is more devastating to the sport than some kid getting paid in high school, because kids have been getting paid in high school for years to go to a school. But at least when they get paid in high school, you want to see them at least 3 years at that program.
Yes.
If you're a fan of the program, if you're a fan of the conference, if you're a fan of the sport, you want guys to be synonymous with those schools they attend and where they play. You don't want a bunch of Jordan Addisons out there. You don't want guys taking money out of high school and then a year later after they have a great freshman year, popping their head up like the whack-a-mole game in the transfer portal, and someone with a big mallet with the biggest money comes in and whacks them back down and then puts them back out to their school. The SEC needs to lead in this. I don't think you're going to have this wide net that's going to solve all the problems of college football coming out of spring meetings. But you can come out of that saying, guys, let's keep our eye on the ball. And the ball right now is the transfer portal and what's going on with that, with teams interfering with it. All of this is an issue that we've got these ideas for legislation on it. That's what I hope they do. I think they probably come out of SEC spring meetings with one of those things. And that one thing is probably going to be schedule.
I'm curious, going to be to see what it is.
Well, that and the name, image, likeness conversation will dominate. It's how in depth are they willing to go with trying to push whatever Commissioner Sankey is lobbying for on Capitol Hill? Like, he was there 3 weeks ago. Whatever that discussion entailed and the feedback that he received from the federal level on legislation, and now he's taking that back to their presidents and their athletic directors to discuss and forming the concept of regulation in an NIL world where it's very difficult not to be worried about being sued or being taken to a courtroom, right? Like, there's going to be news on that regard, on that front, that will shape how other conferences will follow suit.